Hello and welcome. This time we're speaking to someone who is rapidly becoming known as a bit of a game changer in the world of private label rights. In fact, the work he's been doing has already brought him to the attention of two heavyweights of the business world, the legendary Brian Tracy and also Kevin Harrington, a former shark on US TV's Shark Tank. So this time it's a pleasure to welcome Stephen Alvey. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Now, before we dig in to how you're shaking up the world of private label rights, perhaps we could start by finding out just a little bit more about you and your background.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing super special or particularly interesting about my background. I was an Army brat, so I grew up mostly overseas in Europe. Graduated high school and followed my father's footsteps, did some time in the military, about 11 years, and then punched out of that job and started the whole internet marketing thing. I live in the Midwest, married, got seven beautiful, crazy children, live on a small acreage, and we tend to chickens and hang around and enjoy the good life for the most part out here. That's about all there is to me.
Seven children, though. I mean, how do you get anything else done when you've got seven children to take care of?
It's a miracle. That's what it is.
It sounds like it. So you mentioned the military. 11 years, you say, in the military?
Yeah, 11 years active duty. And then I, until a little less than a year ago, actually, I was also in the reserves. So about 4 years in the reserves.
Well, firstly, thank you for your service. And secondly, that's quite a career change, going from being in the military to having an online career. How did that change come about?
Yeah, that's funny because I actually remember the exact minute that it happened. I was on, I guess you could call it a guard shift late at night at the squadron. I was off at Air Force Base at the time. And my wife and I had recently been doing some dreaming, the dream home, the dream acreage, the dream lifestyle, that good stuff where, you know, you spend a week addicted to Zillow or Realtor.com and just looking at houses that are way, way outside of your means. And so I was sitting there on that night shift, and I realized if I want to do this someday, and I really wanted to, I wanted to have, I don't care too much about the house itself, but I wanted a good old plot of land and be able to raise my kids with livestock and, you know, the whole hobby farm kind of thing. I really wanted that. And I realized if I'm going to do that, I need more income. I need more money. And the enlisted Air Force salary was not going to cut it. And so initially it just started off as an idea of how to augment my income. And I did that fateful thing, which a lot of people in this industry have in common. I typed in those words, how to make money online. I remember sitting there at that desk and I typed that in, and that was kind of like going down the rabbit hole. You know, it just took me on a journey of you know, learning about how just this whole idea of being able to have an internet marketing or a laptop lifestyle type of business, and all the freedom associated with that, and the potential for making a pretty sizable income from it. And so I tinkered with that for a few years while I was still serving active duty, sort of on the side with not too much success. But that's how it all came about. There was something in life that I wanted. And I knew I would need more money, and then that's how I got into the internet marketing game.
And what kind of time frame are we looking at? So you typed into Google how to make money online. When you started that, how long did it take you before you actually decided, no, this is for me, this is what I want to do full time?
That was maybe a year and a half before I decided I wanted to do it full time. And of course, in the military, you have enlistments, so I wasn't able to just quit per se. Mm-hmm. But my next enlistment end date was going to be March of 2016, and that was the big date. And I decided in advance, you know what, I'm not going to do it. It's very tempting. In the military, there's this whole assumption that once you get past the 10-year mark, you might as well stay in till retirement because you get the pension and all that good stuff. And it's a very tempting deal. But I said to my wife, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to say no, and I'm going to jump ship at year 11 when my enlistment ends. I'm not going to re-up. And I'm going to do this internet marketing thing full time. And it was pretty scary, but God's been good to us, and we pulled it off, by golly.
Well, I was going to say, to be in the military, you have to be brave to do that in the first place, but also then to walk away from the military shows another side completely of bravery. Were your family worried about you making such a big gear shift?
Yeah, big time. The kids were not old enough at that point to know what the heck was going on. But yeah, my wife was very very scared of it, and I was too. Honestly, we were both very anxious about it. It was bittersweet because on the one hand, we both knew what we wanted in life, you know, at the same time, the risk associated with leaving a steady job and starting on the entrepreneurial journey is it's incredibly risky. It's huge. And so, yeah, we were both scared, excited at the same time, but it was definitely scary times. You know, I said I have 7 kids, but at the time we had 4 kids and a fifth. We had just found out we had a fifth on the way. So that, you know, the pressure was on, you know, failure was not an option.
Absolutely. Do you think that's actually spurred you on, though, because of that? Because, as you say, you have got the big family that you need to take care of.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think having my feet to the fire and failure quite literally not being an option is probably the only reason I made it. I think if I had something to fall back on, I would have gotten distracted, I would have gotten lazy, I would have procrastinated, and it never would have gotten done. And those are all things that I struggle with in general anyway. But if I had had something to fall back on, I don't know that we would have made this happen.
It's quite an inspirational story that you have so far. I mean, in terms of working online, what first attracted you to that, Stephen? And also, what was the first thing you did in order to take that massive step forward?
Yeah, so the main attractive thing to it to me was the lifestyle. The lifestyle, you know, the ability to be able to manage my own time, not have a boss, not have to, you know, wake up at a specific time because I'm required to. I'm kind of a softie. I'm kind of a family guy. I like hanging out with the wife and kids. And the idea of being able to carve out my own day and decide just on a whim, you know, how I'm going to spend my time and be able to have that extra time with the family was very, very attractive. And then, of course, admittedly, there's the money side. It's a very lucrative place to be. And that was certainly a big part of it. But yeah, the biggest thing was the time freedom. That was the most attractive thing about it.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the first thing that you did, obviously you typed into Google how to make money online. What were the first steps that you took towards making this your full-time job?
Yeah, so after a whole bunch of dabbling and you know, falling victim to shiny object syndrome and reading this book and watching that course and, you know, the standard story that everybody in the IM space is pretty familiar with, when I finally left active duty and I had to make this happen, the thing that I did was I joined a program by a guy named John Thornhill, where basically the whole point of the program is that it's a coaching program on paper, but the most important part of it is that at the end of the coaching period, he and the program will leverage their assets, namely their email list and their traffic, to help you have a profitable launch. And that was, in and of itself, that was a very scary thing. As is often the case, the solutions that work best are the high-ticket ones, and that was high-ticket. And we had no money, so I didn't even tell my wife about that investment. But that's what I pulled the trigger on, and I worked hard at it for about 6 months. Also, just to sort of bridge the gap between that and my first launch, I did some freelancing, some explainer videos, sales videos, courseware, that sort of thing. So that was sort of the first step into the successful part of the entrepreneurial journey.
Great. And was that an instant success for you, Stephen, or did you have to hustle and, you know, work hard to establish yourself?
Yeah, there was a lot of working hard, but it did go well. It went well. I'm one of the fortunate ones whose first product launch had some pretty solid numbers. It wasn't life-changing or anything, but I want to say on our first launch, we did probably around 25 grand. We built, most importantly, we built a customer list of 500 people or so. So that went quite well, but it's a payoff that I only arrived at after, you know, 6 months of hustling, which I think is always going to be the case.
Mm-hmm. And John does have a good reputation as well. So I think obviously you backed the right horse there, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And just for context, Stephen, which year did you start the business, the online business?
So this would be 2016, just about 4 years ago.
Wow. So relatively recently, and in that time, you've established yourself now as someone who perhaps has really upped the game and raised the bar when it comes to private label rights. Can I just ask, was that where you started? Did you start in private label rights, or is that something that you've kind of moved into over the course of that time frame?
No, we actually started with a software solution. We had a lead generation product, and that was pretty popular, but it was also kind of a headache. Supporting software can be kind of a headache. How I got into PLR is it's funny because I did not intend to. It was kind of an accident. It was one of those situations where the market kind of tells you what they want. And so I knew PLR was an attractive offer. I knew people liked it. I loved it. I had used it myself quite a bit. But I had a PLR launch on the schedule between my first launch and my third launch. And I was expecting my third launch to be, you know, just this incredibly successful thing. And the PLR launch was only meant as sort of a stopgap. You know, just to bridge the gap, just to make sure we can pay the bills between the first one and the second one. I was not expecting anything to come of it. And it ended up being just this astronomical, huge success, way, way more successful than I thought. The conversion rates on the front end were phenomenal. And the conversion rates on the upsells were phenomenal. And then people were coming out and saying this is one of the best funnels that they'd ever seen. Randy Smith actually was incredibly excited about how well it was going. And so you step back. You know, you were planning on going in one direction, but the market told you something completely different. So you step back and you scratch your head and you rub your chin a little bit and you just sort of assess. Well, the market has literally told me that they like this, and they want more of this. So what should I do? And the answer, in my case at least, was to continue down the PLR path and just keep cranking that stuff out. You know, we're good at cranking it out. We make good stuff, and the market loves it. So it was, it's just one of those natural things, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean the stuff itself. I mean, it looks great. The content itself is really solid. I mean, you've done some amazing work already, and I'm sure right now you're in a way just getting started. I'm sure there's plenty more to come. For anybody who wonders though, Stephen, why you would create such a great product only to then give away the rights for others to be able to exploit that instead of keeping those rights for yourself. Would you be able to just explain to me why you think that's a good thing?
Well, there's a couple answers. The first answer that comes to mind, and this will sound shallow, but the first answer is money. It's lucrative because the market loves it. People love it. There's a whole lot of perceived value and real value there. And so it's a great industry to be in. It's what I call it. It has vertical appeal, okay? Meaning it's not something that only has appeal to, you know, one of the rungs of the industry. You know, for example, if I come out with a course or a piece of software on, let's say, collecting opt-ins on a WordPress page, that's going to appeal to newbies mostly, maybe people one rung up the ladder from there, but it's not going to appeal to the rest of the industry per se because they're all well beyond that, right? You compare that to a private label solution, everybody always wants PLR. Everybody. Mm-hmm. The newbies, the veterans, you know, the rock stars, everybody loves PLR. And they use it all the time. They use it as bonuses, they use it as lead magnets, they use it, you know, for content repurposing and all sorts of stuff like that. So the fact that it has vertical appeal, all across the market from top to bottom, it makes it a very attractive thing to launch. And then, you know, there's other aspects to it as well as far as the relationship with the customer. There's nothing wrong with an info product or an e-learning or an e-teaching, I should say, relationship. You know, that's great. And that probably defines most of the info product space. But there's something interesting and appealing to me about a relationship in which what I'm providing to people is not knowledge, not, hey, you know, go click here and then do this and this is how you do that, but rather an asset that they can take and incorporate into their business and their operations. You know, there's a difference in the relationship that you have with the customer. There's a difference in the type of customers. Those customers tend to be a little bit more inclined towards being action-oriented people, you know, because they've recognized the need to acquire an asset and go take action and use it, versus the entry-level folks who are just interested in the knowledge, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with that by any means. It's just it's a different type of relationship, a different type of customer, and it's one that appeals to me quite a bit more.
I think one of the key things that you mentioned there, Stephen, as well, is the fact that, you know, you've opened up a much wider market. You're absolutely right that you've identified that here's a product now, because it comes with PLR rights, that actually has more, it's more attractive to the entire marketplace instead of just to a small segment of that market. So I'm not surprised you've decided that this is the way forward. Now, at the time that we're having this conversation, you've just finished quite a big launch. Would you say that's your biggest launch yet?